Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Berkeley linguistics don George Lakoff came roaring out of academia and into political celebrity after the presidential election of 2004. Republicans, said Lakoff, were trouncing Democrats at the polls by using language to frame every debate their way. The proudly partisan professor said it was time for liberal progressives to fight back or fade away. Now, Lakoff is making an even bigger claim that American conservatives are rapidly redefining the idea of freedom itself, away, he claims, from its traditional American meaning and into something smaller and meaner, something dangerous. Up next on Point, George Lakoff on language, the American mind, and the future of freedom. Joining me from New York is Berkeley Professor of Linguistics George Lakoff. His book, Don't Think of an Elephant, on how the GOP was winning the battle to frame American political debate, made him a star in Democratic Party circles after the 2004 elections. His new book is Whose Freedom? The Battle Over America's Most Important Idea. George Lakoff, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Tom.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. Lakoff.
Hi.
George Lakoff, let's dive right in. You say your view, radical conservatives are achieving a reversal of freedom. What do you mean?
Well, the traditional American freedoms have been progressive freedoms. And you can see this by the way they've been expanded over the years, the way that the American people have insisted on their expansion. For example, take voting rights. It used to be the case at the time of the Constitution that only white male property owners could vote. By Andrew Jackson's time, that they had eliminated the property owners, and eventually they eliminated the whites and then the males, and they expanded voting rights regularly. And this has been demanded. It's a form of freedom that Americans have celebrated and demanded. Same has been for civil rights. Expanding civil rights. It used to be, for example, that African Americans couldn't stay at certain hotels, eat at certain lunch counters, drink from water fountains, and so on. All of these things have been eliminated. Freedoms have been expanded. The same in terms of opportunity, good jobs, better working conditions, worker rights. In education, Americans have insisted on the freedom to of access to ideas and to knowledge. From a grammar school education to a high school education to junior college to college, and now in some places to graduate programs. The same is true of public health and life expectancy, which contribute to freedom. You're not very free if you're sick. This is something that Americans have insisted on over and over, and these are the progressive freedoms. And
you look back
this.
On that history from the abolition of slavery and right on through all the establishments of rights you're talking about, and you see there the American tradition of freedom, though you can see that there have always been, it's always been more than one definition of freedom at work in the country. What's the conservative definition or view of it?
Well, freedom concerns the ability to achieve your goals and without people stopping you and having the ability to do so. Now, going back in the history of the country to even the colonies, we had a notion of freedom based on the use of the commonwealth. States used to be called commonwealths because they put together the commonwealth for the common good to build an infrastructure so that everybody, each person, could use that infrastructure to achieve their goals. So we have highways and schools and public buildings, but also nowadays we have the banks. If you want to start a business, you need a bank loan. They're supported by the federal government. We have the Federal Reserve. The stock market needs the SEC. You need the court system. 90% of it is to enforce contracts and corporate law. The internet, built by taxpayer money and maintained, the satellite system, and so on.
So I ask about freedom, and you respond with rights and government structures to ensure those rights, and we understand that perspective. But there is, of course, another one, the kind of don't tread on me. Even back in those early American colonies, a kind of freedom to practice a very intrusive religion. What is that conservative view of freedom that's at work, and you say, coming to dominate the American mind now?
Well, I'm not sure it's dominating yet, but it's getting there. The conservative view says this, that if you want to achieve your goals, instead of putting together, instead of having a government that cares about people, that is responsible, that puts together the Commonwealth, instead you need a strong leader who says, here's what you do, do what I say, or you get punished. Morality is obedience, you have to follow that. And you need discipline, and you need to be able to do things for yourself, to seek your own self-interest, take care of yourself, and that's it. It's a you're-on-your-own kind of freedom in which there's nobody else going to watch out for you at all. So there's a big difference between saying we're all in this together, we take care of each other, versus you're-on-your-own. And the you're-on-your-own idea has been there all the way through. But what Americans keep insisting on is the expansion of progressive freedom. And notice the recent case, the question of NSA spying.
Mm-hmm.
In this, progressives will say, our personal freedoms have been taken away. They're being abridged. We're going backwards. And the president will say, I'm just defending American freedom by spying on people without a warrant. Now, what's interesting is nobody is saying, we want more spying. We want you to protect our freedom more by spying on us more. Nobody is insisting on the expansion of the president's idea of freedom.
But it's already been expanded, this monitoring of Americans, and it's still going on. The country hasn't risen up to say no.
That's correct. But what's happened is nobody has said, we want more spying.
But we've already said this is
unfortunate, right. Maybe we need it, yeah. It's not a good idea. But nobody says, we want more. Let's take voting rights, which is another kind of case. In Ohio and in Florida and in Missouri right now, conservative Republicans are trying to limit voting rights in various ways. But they're not coming out and say, we want fewer people voting. We want to restrict voting rights. Instead, they quietly go about pushing people off the rolls or trying to get identity cards that certain people won't be able to get and so on. What's going on is they actually are doing things to restrict our freedoms, but they're not coming out and saying it because they know that most Americans really want expansions of progressive freedom.
But a lot is being said about freedom and liberty. As you note, these words are used nonstop by the president. But you see them, George Lickoff, Berkeley professor of linguistics, you see them as not in the interests of the real American tradition of freedom. So what's going on, and why does it matter how language is being used here? You say the very idea of freedom is at risk. Why? How?
This is not a matter of just language. Language means something. Freedom is what's called a contested concept. Different people have different ideas of it, and there are some parts of it where we share. We have certain things where we all agree are instances of freedom, and then there are cases where either progressive or conservative moral worldviews extend that notion of freedom in one direction or the other. What's happened is that the conservative idea of freedom has been extended more and more and more, with the conservatives not only taking the idea of freedom and liberty and using those words over and over, but changing the idea of what it means. So, for example, take economic liberty or economic freedom.
Mm-hmm.
FDR talked about freedom from want, and Social Security was a great example of freedom from want. Freedom from want is something that Americans have insisted on over time. And Social Security said, look, there's a certain bottom that you won't fall below, and this is it. You're going to be okay.
But we heard the clip from President Bush there in his inaugural. President Bush said freedom from want and fear right in his second inaugural. What's the difference?
And what he meant by it is something utterly different, which is you now he had private accounts where you could now become an investment expert. And if you were a very good investor, you could actually make more on a private account than you could in your government account. And you were free to do that, the idea was. But, of course, most people are not investment experts. And the reason this lost is just that. Most people identify with who they really are, and they're not really stock market sharpies. And they knew perfectly well that what this meant was the people who were would make more money and they would lose. And this is not freedom from want for everybody. It's freedom from want for those people who are economically knowledgeable and disciplined and able to do what, you know, people who know how to do investments.
There's a lot more to look at here, George Lakoff. Let me just get Jack Beattie, your first responser. Do you see freedom being hijacked? Is the very meaning of it being dragged off in one direction away from American tradition or not?
Well, I see that there's a debate going on about it, and that he who gets the high ground here controls the game. Americans really value freedom. But I do think that Professor Lakoff may be wrong when he says the American tradition is we're all in this together, and basically the New Deal. That was the aberration in the American experience, it seems to me. Our political culture has tended far more toward the conservative idea of freedom. Richard Hofstadter said we have a democracy in cupidity, not in fraternity. Our democracy is about people getting ahead, about free competition among individuals, about improving our opportunities.
Professor Lakoff, you are a cognitive science guy, a linguistics professor, and you say it's not just a matter of changing people's minds about freedom, but actually changing the brains. That sounds spooky. What do you mean?
Well, all ideas are physically instantiated in the neural networks of your brain. When you learn a word or you learn an idea, your brain physically changes. And it's important in this case to understand that our freedoms are the progressive freedoms are the traditional ones, because Republicans and conservatives have been trying to change our ideas about those. Let me answer what Jack Beattie asked before. On the question of Americans getting ahead and wanting opportunity, of course that's true, but how do they want it? Again, there's a reason why we have terms like the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, of Pennsylvania, of Virginia, because they wanted it by using the Commonwealth to build an infrastructure for everybody so that each person could get ahead, each person could have opportunity. Take a look at the Homestead Act, for example, where the Commonwealth, our land, was given to people to develop. The land-grant colleges went this way. And we've had many cases throughout our history of developing a banking system where your investments would be protected, a stock market system, and so on, and especially a court system where contracts would be honored so that people could do business. All of that is using the Commonwealth in order to be getting ahead. And that is a case where we're all in it together. If you say the government should fade away, we should, drown it in the bathtub, get rid of all taxation, what does that mean? It means getting rid of the use of the Commonwealth for the common good so that we can each do better. It means everybody's on their own, and it's never really been that way. I think Warren Buffett said it best. He said, if you had dropped me in Bangladesh 30 years ago, I would still be impoverished because they had no banking system and no stock market. And that tells it all right there. Nobody makes it on their own in this country. Not one businessman makes it on their own without using the Commonwealth in some way, either in getting bank loans, in having contracts supported by the court system, in selling stocks with the SEC regulating it, in using the Internet, in using the highways to transport their goods.
So you see freedom as a kind of system. You're describing conservatives as seeing it as a kind of, I'm on my own hook, and that's fine by me. I want to get our callers involved in this. David's calling from Medfield, Massachusetts. Hi, David, you're on the air.
Hi. One of the things that strikes me about this, and I'm very interested in hearing the comment about how we really need to change people's brains about it, is that everything I've read on the statistics of who makes up the radical right is that, by and large, these are the people who have been the victims of globalization, job loss in America, and things like that. So they're actually voting and speaking against their own economic self-interest.
And what do you make of that, David? I know George Lakoff has an opinion on that, but what do you make of that, if that's the case?
Well, I think what it is, and I used to be a speechwriter for honest-to-God liberal Michael Dukakis years ago, so I know how important the rhetoric is, but it seems to me more important is that the schools are not teaching critical thinking, so that these people are not examining the arguments behind this, because I think if they did, they would realize that this actually is counter to their own interests.
David, let us pick that up. George Lakoff, David walks right into your kind of rhetorical trap here. You say Democrats always assume that if people just thought about things more clearly, they would come around to the progressive point of view. You say, as a linguistics observer, that's not the case. Why?
Not at all. This is what I'll call the rationalist trap. It assumes that if you just tell people the facts and get them to do rational, critical thinking, they'll all reach the right conclusion. It's false because we have two different views of the world here. A conservative, what I'll call a strict father view of the world, and a progressive, what I'll call a nurturing parent view of the world. Very, very different views that are opposed to each other. And what's interesting is that not everybody falls in one camp or the other politically. There are biconceptuals, people who are strict in one part of their lives and nurturant in other parts of their lives. And there are even people who identify themselves as conservative but are actually progressive in many areas. For example, there are conservatives who love the land, who are basically environmentalists. They want to hunt and fish and be able to eat the fish they catch and go hiking in the wilderness and love the beauty of the land. People who identify as conservatives but actually are progressive Christians who view God as a nurturing God and who care about the poor and about the helpless. There are conservatives who identify themselves as such but actually are ethical business people who would never want to do anything like pollute the water in the streams and harm people.
Why are conservatives being so successful? If you describe the American public as kind of balanced or torn, as you will, between these two views, and yet we've got the White House and both houses of Congress in the Republican Party category here.
Because for the last 35 years, the conservatives have understood something that the progressives have not. They have understood that you talk to what is called the center of people who are both views but in different parts of their lives, you talk to the center the way you talk to your base. That is, you say the same things to activate your worldview in them. So Reagan, for example, understood that blue-collar workers were strict at home but nurturant in their union workplace. So he used metaphors for the home in politics to take their view of the home, their worldview of the home, which is basically a conservative worldview, and apply it to politics. This has been done very artfully over the past 35 years by the conservatives. The progressives have it wrong. They think you move to the left and move from the left to the right to get more votes. The conservatives don't move to the left to get more votes.
Bill Clinton triangulated and famously did it. So was he not president for 8 years?
But not for that reason. Clinton was president for 8 years because he was a nurturer and everybody saw it. Everybody looked at him and you knew just by listening to his voice and looking at him that he cared and he was a competent person. It wasn't just the triangulation that worked.
Let me ask you about the way you're painting this last 30 years as a kind of triumph of ideas, but isn't there a reality piece here as well? I mean, people looked at the excesses or failures of the social welfare system in the 60s and 70s and said, in the kind of stagnation, stagflation, wasn't there something real that people were responding to? You describe the conservative vision of freedom as being opposed to lots of government interventions because they believe that creates dependency and robs people of their freedom. Didn't reality give Americans some reason to think about that?
Reality has to be framed in order to be seen. Yes, there were certain things that needed to be fixed up about the welfare system, about many other things in the government. But many of the things were working extremely well. You know, science was working very well. People were basically better off and so on. We were doing very well in the world after the Vietnam War, and we got out of that. This is something that the conservatives then went after, framing things their way and picking out those points of reality that would fit their frames and ignoring all the others, ignoring the wonders of Social Security and the importance of it, ignoring the successes of Medicare, ignoring the successes of diplomacy and of the UN, ignoring all the things that did not fit their worldview.
If those were so good, why would conservatives want to ignore them?
Because they don't fit their ideology. They want to change the world. They're radicals. These are not people who want to preserve, you know, all the things that were wonderful about America. These are people who have a different idea about what's wonderful. They think it's wonderful if you're on your own and you have no safety nets at all and nobody has any.
Because
they
that will bring out the best great. In each individual human being. That's the perspective.
That's the idea, and it won't work. It doesn't work. And you see this in something that's hidden. The bottom quarter of our workforce are in what I will call a trap, a cheap labor trap. Our economy keeps driving down the cost of labor. That is, labor is seen as a resource, and what do you do with resources? You try to get them as cheaply as possible. And outsourcing is part of that. And the idea is to drive down the cost of labor, bring in immigrants, have them work cheaply, or outsource. Between those two, you drive down the cost of labor. So since George Bush came into office, corporate profits have doubled, but wages have not gone up. They've gone down slightly.
So here's a linguistics expert with a big political axe as well. Galen's calling from Andover, Massachusetts. Hi, Galen. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking the call.
Certainly.
Professor Lakoff, thank you. I've read a number of your books. They're very good. I just have a question, a two-part question, and that is, first, on a scale of 0 to 100, how certain are you of your definitions of freedom? And then secondly, you seem to impute a number of motives to conservatives. Do you think they act in good faith? In other words, is it possible to be both a sincere and intelligent conservative? Are they simply manipulated public opinion?
Galen, thanks. Okay, George Lakoff.
Let me answer the second one first. Of course, and in fact, in each of my books, from Moral Politics to Don't Think of an Elephant to Whose Freedom, I have pointed out repeatedly that most conservatives are people who see themselves as moral, who act out of the best of motives, who believe what they say. I think George Bush believes what he says. I think it's horrible, but I think he believes in it. I think he's serious. I don't think he's incompetent. I think relative to his values, he's extremely competent. He has achieved more for the conservative cause than you could imagine. It's an incredible achievement what he's done if you're a conservative. If you're a liberal, he seems like he's getting everything wrong because he's going against your worldview. In terms of definitions, this isn't an issue of definition. This is part of cognitive science. I've spent a year going through the conservative literature, the websites, everybody using freedom and liberty every way you could, trying to get every single case I could find and understand the generalization about how it works. I think I've done that in the book. I've done it as well as I could. Maybe someone, other linguists could come by and do it better. Undoubtedly, I've missed many things. It's a very difficult job because freedom is used, a huge amount of times by everyone. But I've done as well as I can. On between 0 and 100, I hope I've hit a 90.
Let's turn to another call here. We've got Mark calling from Acton, Massachusetts. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Pretty good. What do you think, Mark?
I think Professor Lakoff is right on a number of things. However, I would say that the problem is not conservatives. The problem is that the right-wing radicals have taken over the Republican Party. There are very few conservatives, traditional conservatives, left. And the way they took it over, and this is where I think the professor doesn't go quite far enough, the way they took it over is something liberals need to learn, the power of contempt. For decades, the right wing has held the left in contempt, and it has caused the people who maybe don't have the time to spend looking at issue positions to recoil whenever an identified liberal comes on with a position.
Mark, there's a lot of contempt for the right out there in liberal blogger land these days.
Well, there is, but I tell you what, elected officials need to be more direct. And let me give you an example of that. They need to point out that Dick Cheney and George Bush have not been right on virtually anything they've said with regard to the Iraq War. And they need to go out there and say they haven't told the truth. And when they get challenged by reporters who say, are you saying they're lying? The response is they're either liars or they're too incompetent to know what the truth is. But the bottom line is they can't be believed and they don't deserve trust. And that's the kind of rhetoric that the right has used for a generation to marginalize and demonize the left.
And you're saying left, pick it up, go with it as well?
Pardon me?
You want the left to do the same, Mark?
When it's warranted, and they warrant it. If you want, you want to know if Dick Cheney's a liar, I have the videotape to prove it. Gloria Borger confronted him with his statement that that it was confirmed, pretty well confirmed, that Mohammed Atta had met with Iraqi officials in Prague.
Right.
He denied to her face that he ever said it. And
yep.
She was so dumbfounded, she couldn't even follow up on it. So
Mark, we've got it. George Lakoff, how about it? Mark says, Democrats, bring on the contempt and you can win again.
Basically right, but not mere contempt. I think you have to understand how conservative populism works, and there's a whole chapter of the book going through the details of exactly how it works. What the conservatives have done is convince a lot of people who have a strict father morality in some part of their lives that they are being oppressed by liberals. And I mean that, oppressed by liberals.
Yeah. And we've heard
so
that
there's
many
the liberal
times,
elite,
sure.
the Hollywood liberals, the liberal media, etc. And the way that works is very interesting. That is, if you have a strict father morality and you identify yourself that way, then you don't accept a progressive worldview. And you also have a different view of how causation itself works. You think in terms of direct individual causation where there's individual responsibility instead of systemic causation that works throughout society, whereas liberals think very much in terms of systemic causation. And that is not seen as reasonable by conservatives. So you have issues like property rights, where in Portland, outside of Portland, there was an anti-sprawl law, and somebody who owned a farm, a family farm, says, I want to sell my farm to a developer. It was against the law. And he challenged that by saying, I'm being oppressed by liberals. You know, I can't sell my traditional family farm to anybody I want.
Is he wrong?
Because they think. From the liberal perspective, he was wrong. From his perspective, he saw himself as correct. And he, from his perspective, he was being oppressed. From the perspective of environmentalism, he was quite wrong.
Let me grab a quick call from Nashville, Tennessee. Kathy's on the line. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Terrific to be on here. And I would say, in answer to your rhetorical question, I would say I come firmly down on the George side of the George Lakoff of the world in my definition of freedom.
Okay, okay.
But that's rather a puzzler to me. And he had touched on the idea that the hardwiring of the brain, in fact, changes under the tutelage of some of this rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up attending a private fundamentalist school here in the Bible Belt.
Okay.
And as a daily part of my regular lessons in history, English, the regular school day things, we would have things thrown in like, I remember a speech teacher telling us in middle school that Quincy espoused socialism on television. This was a popular show at
the
time.
Right, right.
You know,
so do you think your brain was actually shaped by that, or are you doubting that, Kathy?
It's very interesting to me that I still retain many of my friendships from this school. And
but what about
all
the ideas?
My friends are staunch Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
They are all hard-line conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow I wound up being, I would say, very moderate in some respects, given that I am of the Christian faith,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not of the Christian faith and espousing this concept that we are a Christian nation and that we must, you know, return to our Christian values. And last time I checked, many of our founding fathers were, in fact, deists.
So you're saying, how does this hardwiring work if it didn't?
How did I wind up stepping out of the lockstep when I had this same sort of pervasive indoctrination 8 hours a day? I didn't receive it at home. My parents were of a more moderate bent.
Right, but there you got it at school, and you see yourself as having walked somewhat away from it. George Lakoff, I don't think this is such a commonly understood idea. Is it completely accepted in your world that a flow of language, of rhetoric, actually changes the physical brain over time? And if so, what about an example here like Kathy's in Nashville?
Well, Kathy's example is exactly what I write about in the book, what I call biconceptualism, which we all have. If you're raised in this culture, you may be a progressive in every part of your life, but if you can walk into an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie and understand it, you understand a strict father worldview. We all have it, and many people are progressive or nurturant in some parts of their lives and strict in others. If you were raised by nurturant parents, you're going to have gotten that at home. If you were raised as a progressive Christian who cared about the poor, cared about the downtrodden, who had a view of God not as a strict father, but as a nurturing parent who offered grace and forgiveness and so on, if that was the kind of Christian you were, then that's the reason you are the way you are today.
What about compassionate Christians, to use President Bush's phrasing?
That is a very interesting word, because it's not empathy, it's compassion, looking down from above. It's he's talking about private charities where you get to decide who is worthy, who are the worthy poor from your perspective, who you want to give some charity to, but not provide a safety net for. Those are very, very different ideas. That's not true empathy, not true compassion from a progressive perspective. From a conservative perspective, it says, look, if you have succeeded, then, you know, you can decide who is worthy or not of your compassion.
I want to turn to New York for a moment and to Kellyanne Conway, Republican pollster. She's been listening in. She's president and CEO of the polling company. Clients include Heritage Foundation, Republican National Committee, National Rifle Association, Family Research Council. She's co-author of What Women Really Want. Kellyanne, do we have you there?
I hope so.
The implication here is that folks in your business, sort of Republican pollsters and mind readers and mind shapers, are sort of, I don't know, brainwashing the American public to forget what freedom really means. What do you say to that charge?
Oh, that's such nonsense. What, are we on a school ground with other kindergarten players? That means that the American people are stupid and impressionable, and I don't share that view. That sounds like sour grapes from people who have been outsmarted in a way to communicate values to the broader populace, and who have run awful candidates for president twice in a row. I didn't pick John Kerry and Al Gore as the Democratic presidential nominees. They were terrible on the stump. They were very inarticulate in expressing the intelligence I know both of them have.
Do you agree that there are competing understandings of freedom in this country, Kellyanne?
Let's certainly hope so, because even though at some level freedom is a common denominator, and let's hope that too, and has an objective definition, people do have, you know, you talk about moral relativism sometimes. People will say, well, I would not have stolen that loaf of bread except X, or it's okay I didn't tell them that they gave me $10 extra in change at McDonald's, but hey, I spent enough at McDonald's. You know, moral equivalence, moral relativism everywhere. People also have a secular relativism, and sometimes that means several different interpretations and understandings, many of them subjective, about a word that is supposed to bind all of us. But I have to say, I like the First Amendment. If people have differing viewpoints about a core American value, that's fine. It's when people try to redefine something that does have an objective definition and a history that I would take umbrage. But this idea that anybody, any political party, any silly pundit or blogger owns a word in the American lexicon, if that were true, then it means that people are stupid and impressionable, and I can't subscribe to that philosophy.
So you say, sure, there's a competition here, but that's kind of part and parcel of the country. Kellyanne Conway at the Polling Company in New York, thank you very much for being with us.
By the way,
let me ask you, yes?
I agree with much of what she said. For example, I don't think people are stupid. We're not trying to say people are being brainwashed at all. This isn't, I mean, in fact, I write about why they're not being brainwashed, why this is something very different than that. The Democratic candidates for president were not as good as they should have been by any means. I mean, they messed up completely. So I agree with her on those points.
But her point is, why shouldn't or wouldn't Americans figure this out on their own? You were criticized in Jack's magazine, The Atlantic, by Mark Cooper. He said that you saw Americans as redneck, chain-smoking, baby-slapping Christers desperately in need of some gender-free nurturing. Is there a condescension in your view of what's going on here?
He got it wrong. He never actually read the books. He just didn't read them. If he had read Moral Politics, he would have known that half of the book is describing the conservative moral worldview.
But is there a condescension at work here, or are you saying conservatives are just so fiendishly skilled at what you're describing? It's not condescension, it's a kind of manipulation, maybe not brainwashing.
No, they're doing what they ought to be doing. They understand how things work. They understand better how the mind works than progressives do. They understand better how to use language. They understand a lot of things. Take what Kellyanne was just saying. She claims that there's an objective definition of freedom. That's ludicrous, as anybody who reads that literature knows, or anybody who does linguistics knows, that this is a contested concept. It's a classical example of a contested concept, which means people inevitably have different understandings of them. And what I've done in the book is show the analysis of that, showing exactly how it works. And there are two different views. There is no such thing as an objective definition of freedom, and we've known this for many years. She's not a linguist, and that's fine.
You're saying there's a core definition, but people split off from it very quickly.
That's correct. And then she talks about moral relativism, which just isn't true. Most liberals are not moral relativists at all. They have a really clear morality. They look at what this administration has done, and they say it is immoral to have started that war on false pretenses. It is immoral to be destroying the environment. It is immoral to make people poorer rather than wealthier. It is immoral to try to get rid of Social Security. And they come down on this in case after case, saying why it's immoral from their perspective.
Jack, conservatives
have a different morality.
Jack, what about it? Where are we headed here? Can you imagine, Jack, freedom being... the weight of our understanding of freedom being radically shifted in a new direction, at least from the last decades, as you see them?
Well, it's going to take new experience. I mean, I think Professor Lakoff collapses culture and history into cognition, and I really think these are separate things. If you look at charts, if you look at data of comparing Americans to other views of people in other nations, what's the salient difference? Americans distrust government. Overwhelmingly. No, the Japanese, the Europeans, far, far more positive feelings about government. That is the essential conservatism of the American people. And it isn't something that elites have drummed up or that, has been fathered on us because people, control concepts. It comes out of the American experience.
Does that mean a progressive notion of freedom is doomed?
It doesn't mean it's doomed. It means it fights against the cultural hegemony of this settled American belief. And that's the American exceptionalism. Now, that came down in the New Deal. People thought better about government.
Mm-hmm.
But after the war, when the private economy recovered, people realized that government is what takes money from people. It taxes people. It regulates them. It oppresses them, and so on. And they began to see government, distrust government again. That is the native groove. And I think that to talk about, progressive freedom, it's fine, but you're talking against the drift of American history.
George Lakoff, we've just got a moment. Can liberals, progressives, talk their way back to a dominant cultural Jack understanding of freedom?
Jack is just wrong about that history. Americans distrust governments interfering with their private freedom. They don't distrust government, for example, when they run a banking system, when they have a court system for contracts, when they have an educational system, when they have a highway system. They don't distrust government for providing for the common good and an infrastructure that everyone can use. They distrust, where they should distrust on progressive grounds, government coming after their personal freedom, as our government is now doing.
Battle lines drawn there. George Lakoff, professor of cognitive science and linguistics at Berkeley, author of the new book, Whose Freedom? The Battle Over America's Most Important Idea. Professor Lakoff, thank you very much for being with us.
And it's a pleasure, Tom, and nice to talk to you, Jack.
Jack Beatty, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.